It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Trey. Thank you for joining us for a Tuesday edition of our podcast. If you've listened to this podcast before for any length of time, even when it has nothing to do with football season, you know I like our next guest. It's almost impossible not to like him. In fact, I haven't run into anyone who doesn't like him. Even people who are staunch, lifelong Clemson fans grudgingly admit that they like him as a person. He's a head football coach at the University of South Carolina. They just wrapped up spring practice, had their spring scrimmage. And now because of the state of college football, it takes amphetamines to stay up all night long to watch the transfer portal to see whether or not any of the players he spent 5 years recruiting have decided they want to go play somewhere else. So against that happy backdrop, Coach Beamer, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. That was a pretty much said it all right there, Trey. So thanks for having me on. I always enjoy visiting with you, and it's a good reprieve from some of the other stuff that's going on around us right now in college athletics.
Well, as you know, I listen to all of your press conferences to my wife's chagrin. Sometimes I'll listen to them twice to make sure I didn't miss something. You have the patience of, I think it's pronounced Job. I said Job when I was a kid because that's the way it's spelled. But the guy in the Bible that had a lot of bad things happen to him. When I watch your press conferences, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, the questions, you are not Nick Saban. Nick Saban does not put up with that stuff. You just have a different way. So let me just start by asking that. I mean, do you ever get frustrated? Because it doesn't look like you do.
No, I mean, I know everyone asking questions, they have a job to do, and I appreciate that I appreciate the attention and publicity that they give our program as well. The thing I get frustrated with is when I think someone is trying to ask a question that has a negative connotation, trying to create a controversy, trying to just be negative, almost like they've sat around for 3 days thinking about what's the most crazy negative question that I can ask him and try and get a reaction out of him. And unfortunately, I think, you know, some people think that's the way to do things, but it is what it is. So I try and be patient, try and understand that they all have a job to do. Like to think that I've got a really good relationship with the people that cover our team locally for the most part, and respect the job they do, and try and help them do the job that they're paid to do.
You always start your press conferences by thanking them, not in a perfunctory way, but in a real way for being there. You always highlight what's going on with other sports programs at USC, whether it's the equestrian team or Dawn Staley's team. I mean, it all of them. And then you actually end your press conferences with what seems like a genuine thank you for covering the program. So I just, you have no future in politics whatsoever being that nice of a person. So I will warn you right now, if you want to go into politics, you're going to have to become a much worse person than what you are right now.
Duly noted. But no, I do. We talk about gratitude all the time in our program, and I am grateful to people when I walk into a room that there's a lot of people that come to hear what I have to say and cover Gamecock athletics, because there are avenue to the fans that follow our program. So I appreciate them being there. And I do like to highlight the other sports, because obviously football gets a lot of attention, but we've got a lot of awesome student athletes here on our campus at Carolina that work really, really hard and want to highlight what they're doing. And it's one of the things I love about this being a college coach, is you're surrounded by so many great student athletes and fellow coaches. When football is successful, it helps our entire university and all the sports. But it's also helpful when Dawn's team is successful and Lamont Paris, our men's basketball coach, is successful, and Shelly Smith, our women's soccer coach, when they're successful, being able to just spotlight all the great things going on with our athletic program. We're all support one another, and glad that I can do my part in a small bit.
All right, you got some new coaches. Walk us through. I'm not going to ask you what I want to ask you because you're too nice of a person to talk about it. I'll just let people know, but I'm not going to ask you about it. We had a coach and for a minute, and then he left and went to another program. I actually like the new coach better. But walk us through the process that you go through when there is an opening on your staff, because Senator Tim Scott and I have applied for a couple of the openings that you've had on your staff, and we have actually, at least my agent, has not heard from you. So I don't know how you go about doing the hiring. Do you have to be qualified? Is that what rules us out?
No, I think it's you're always looking for fit, and you and Senator Scott are qualified. It just hasn't been the right fit at the right time, Trey. Not to say it's not going to happen. It just hasn't been the right fit at that moment.
Pretty sure it's not going to happen.
No, for me, it's one, you know there's going to be opportunities that guys get, and you hope you're losing people for head coaching jobs, which we had two coaches leave to go be a head coach. That's great. Or an opportunity to go be a offensive or defensive coordinator somewhere if they're a position coach here. Natural promotions and progressions, which I respect. I mean, I had multiple jobs as an assistant coach, and that I took that led me to here. So want to support our guys and want them to be successful. So you're always preparing for, okay, if you lose someone, who would you consider? And I do that every day. It may be a coach that I don't even know, but maybe I saw an interview that he did and I was impressed, or maybe we played against his team and I'm like, man, this guy's their offensive line is so well coached, or their defensive backs are so well coached and really impressive. Or in recruiting, you talk to players and they're like, coach, I really like so-and-so at school X. You know, I've got a great relationship with him. Or high school coaches talk about, man, that coach from wherever was really impressive. So you're always like taking notes on guys, and kind of you hear about athletic directors talk about they always have a list of head coaches. Well, I also have a list of potential assistant coaches that I would like to consider at some point. But when you do have an opening come open, it is always about fit and, to me, what that particular position group needs at that time. You're referring to the wide receiver group. And so for me this year, it was, all right, after everything this receiver group has been through, like, what kind of personality do they need? What kind of coach do they need? So you're always looking at that. You may refer to the list. You may have some guys in mind automatically that, hey, there is no list. I know this is the guy I want to hire. And then I will also reach out to the coordinator on that side of the ball, the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator that just lost one of their coaches, to kind of see where they are. And then we maybe share names, think about the same people, or be thinking about the same people. In this instance, when we brought in Mike Furry as our wide receivers coach, when we had an opening, it was a lot of people reach out to you, and then you're working with myself and Dow Loggins, our offensive coordinator. You know, who are we interested in talking to? You know, I really like this guy. I'm not really sure about this, but I don't think that's what we're looking for right now. And you kind of get it narrowed down to a handful of guys that you maybe want to interview in person or on Zoom that you just get a chance to know and talk football with and see if they'd be a fit. And that's what we did with Mike. He was the first person we talked to, actually. And he spent half the day here, and he got done with the interview, and Dow and I talked about it. And Dow was like, what do you think? And I said, man, we can interview some other people, but I'm hiring that guy. I mean, he was impressive. And he's been awesome. But that's typically how it works. And I'd say that's pretty standard for most coaches as well. I think coaches are different, Trey, and how many people they want to interview. You may have some coaches that want to interview 8 to 10 people, and that's fine. You may have some coaches that interview 2 to 3, which we've done here with some people that are positions that we had open. But at the end of the day, it's the right fit, you know, for what we're about as a program, the kind of person they are, recruiting ties, you name it, and what you need. And I'm really excited. We got 4 new coaches, and really excited about all of them and what they've brought to the table.
We'll be right back with more of the Trey Gowdy Podcast.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
All right, so I'm watching your spring game. I actually watched it a little bit late. South Carolina had a doubleheader baseball. I had to watch that. Then I go on ESPN Plus, and I'm watching our game. And I'm looking at, you know, Dylan Stewart spending a lot of time in the offensive backfield, even though he's the defensive player. Lenore Sellers looks fantastic. And you know what I can't get out of my mind is in about 24 hours, you're going to have to sit down with every single member of your football team and have an honest conversation about where they stand. And the temptation is, I guess, that I don't want to say mislead, but you don't want people to leave your program. But your reputation is that you're an honest guy. So I guess my question's two-part. Walk us through what those conversations are like. And number two, I'm not going to mention any names, although I really, one of these days privately, I will ask you. We see these four stars. We see the excitement the day they sign, and yet it never materializes. And you don't know if it's injury or just a lack of development, or was it a misjudgment during the recruiting process? So that's a two-part question. But those are two things I was sitting there wondering. How do you tell a kid that you want to stay with your program that you're probably not going to see a lot of playing time?
Honesty, and you're right. We finished the spring game on Saturday night at 7 a.m. Monday morning. I started my first individual meeting, and I meet with every single player on the team. So during the season, we'll have 120 guys on our football team. Right now, we have 110 because not everyone's gotten here. So I met with all 110 players individually throughout the day Monday, throughout the day Tuesday, and throughout the day on Wednesday of the week after the spring game. And those conversations are very much, we talk academics, any issues, where how they need to finish, exams coming up, how they feel about stuff. We talk about the spring they had, strengths, areas to improve, summer plans. We give them the month of May is voluntary. So what are their plans in May? Are they staying around here? Are they going home? Are they taking a family trip? Whatever it might be. Talk about that, you know, how their experience is going here at Carolina, what their role is right now, what their role could be going forward, what they need to attack this summer, just really everything, making sure they have a good experience here. And that's really it, is just trying to be honest with them. And I want a guy to be here because he wants to be here. And I don't want to ever lie to, and I never will lie to a guy because I want to keep him around here. I mean, there's one that is going to announce he's going in the portal, and it's a great young man that plays defensive back, and he's playing a position behind two really good players, Nick Emanwori and DQ Smith, who are all American type guys that, this guy's a good player, but it's going to be hard for us to take those two guys off the field. And he wants to play a little bit more. And, I told him that in the meeting, kind of, here's where we are. You're behind those guys. You're fighting to be the next guy in the game after those two. I want you to stay here, do everything right on and off the field, but I understand as a competitor, you want to play. And, you know, he came back in my office a couple of days later and said, you know, I've thought about it. I love it here. Love everything that this program's about, but I don't want to sit and have minimal playing time this upcoming season. I want to go play, and I get it. And then called his dad, talked to his dad. His dad was beyond grateful about the experience he's had here. His son just wants to play a little bit more. And I get that as well. So just having those conversations that are honest with them, and then you pray that they're having the good experience. And then where we've had issues with the portal, Trey, is when a guy walks out of my office and then he goes home and he's away from Columbia for a few days. And now every friend, relative, coach in town's telling him how he'd be better off somewhere else and this and that. And that's when we've had issues, kind of the old out of sight, out of mind thing. But starts with honesty. And then your other part of your question about how, you know, guys that don't necessarily pan out. I don't think it's just college football. I read a stat yesterday. I saw on my phone on X or whatever it's called now, that it was taking like the last 10 NFL drafts and looking at all the first round draft picks, and did they make it to their second contract with the team that drafted them? And that would be your success rate. if you team drafted you, they sign you to a rookie contract, you played well, then they sign you to a second contract. If you did that, that was like a hit. And like literally every position in the NFL, except I think center and offensive guard, had less than a 50% hit rate.
Wow.
Which blew my mind. So I think it's just, you never know. We're limited. The NCAA limits us in how much we can really be around these guys when we're recruiting them. So you've got to get out as much as you can and be in their high schools and find out what makes them tick. And do they love football? And are they competitive? And are they going to get to college and be worried about the wrong stuff? Are they going to get to college and take a breath and think that they've arrived? Or do they love football and they're going to continue to work? And I think it's harder and harder, you know, to do that. That's one of the great, when I worked for Kirby Smart at Georgia, that's one of the big things I took from him is, you know, you see a lot of schools that offer a guy a scholarship, and or most schools, you offer a guy a scholarship, and it's kind of like the evaluation process stops at that point because you're saying, okay, this guy's good enough. We want him. Let's go full speed ahead and recruit him and get him here. Kirby was great. And one thing I definitely took from him was, okay, we've offered this guy a scholarship. He's good enough. But we've really got to continue to evaluate him and really dig into what kind of player he is. Does he go have a great senior season, or does his senior tape not match his junior tape because he relaxed and stopped working because he got all these scholarship offers? I think that's a sign that you see. And frankly, we've had some of that. Some guys that we were recruiting heavily when they were sophomores in high school, then you watch their junior tape and you're like, you know, doesn't quite look the same. Let's really pay attention to him in the summertime. So it's a ongoing constant evaluation process, and you can watch tape and see if a guy's really good, really talented, but you just don't know what motivates them and how driven they are. And that's why I think you do see some of those misses on guys as well. And then it's also the, you know, coaches as well. I mean, I'm not putting it all on players. Sometimes a guy goes to a program and that program maybe doesn't do a great job of developing that player and doesn't get everything out of him. So to me, it goes both ways.
I think I'm going to get this right. And if I'm wrong, then I apologize to Coach 20, but I remember being on his campus with him and he asking about these so-called rating services. You know, I just referred to somebody as a four-star, but I don't even know if y'all talk that lingo. I mean, he almost convinced me he doesn't care what someone who's not a college football coach, how he ranks some high school player. You may think he's a three-star. I think he's a five-star. Like J.D. Clowney, you don't have to be an expert at football to know that he was going to be pretty good. But you also see some people that are four stars that never see the playing field. Do you pay attention to what star someone has, or do you do your own separate analysis?
I would say we do our own. I'm not really aware of what my son asks. My son's 10 years old. And if we bring a guy in on a recruiting trip, that's the first thing he wants to know is how many stars does he have, Dad? And if he's not a four star, he looks at me like, why are we bringing this guy in as well? So my own family, they pay attention. I don't, and I'm not knocking the star rating, because typically if they're a really good player, they're a four-star, five-star, and that's evident. They got a ton of scholarship offers. But I do believe sometimes that can get twisted in some ways. I've never once had a staff meeting here at Carolina, or really Oklahoma or Georgia, where I as the head coach or Lincoln Riley or Kirby Smart sit in a staff meeting when we're talking about a prospect. How many stars does he have? You know if he's good enough. And if he's good enough, then he's probably a, you know, four or five star. But there's also three stars that you see something in that you believe that you can develop, you know, without a doubt. So I'd say the star rating is pretty accurate in the sense that the best schools in the country, those are probably the ones that you're recruiting. But I think sometimes maybe the recruiting sites that are not as thorough as maybe other recruiting agencies or sites, they just see a guy, okay, he's got offers from South Carolina, Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee. He must be a four-star. Great. And never even watch the guy. And I think that happens sometimes as well. Or it's amazing, a guy's a three-star, and he's been a three-star for months, but then all of a sudden top programs in the country offer him a scholarship. Well, he's the same player that you had rated a three-star, but now all of a sudden he's a four-star because of who's offering. I think you get in a little bit of that. So I think that's probably a misconception. And then stats, you know, I see it all the time. And in high school recruiting, like a high school receiver thinks, now I didn't catch enough balls, so I need to go somewhere else where I can catch more balls. Like, we don't, never once have I sat in a recruiting meeting and said, how many catches did he have last year? How many yards rushing did he have? I mean, we watch the tape and we get them in our camps. We go watch them practice in the springtime, go watch them play games in the fall. And that's what we base our evaluations on, not how many rushing yards or catches or tackles they had. I mean, all that's good, don't get me wrong, but we don't spend a lot of time talking about the stats or the ratings from our standpoint.
All right, I got a couple more questions, and then I want you to get back looking for maybe a wide receiver that's 6'4 or taller, and possibly maybe a little bit of depth on the offensive line. So I'm going to let you go as soon, but I got a couple more questions before then. All right, you are known as a relentless recruiter. Relentless. The book on Steve Spurrier was that he kind of played a lot of golf and let you guys recruit. That is not the book on Shane Beamer. The book on you is that you are a relentless recruiter. So you start talking to a kid the moment NCAA allows, and you pour, what, 3 years into it? Whatever the maximum you can. And then in an instant, because of the transfer portal, they're gone. What is the answer for that? Because, I mean, is there any part of you that sits there and thinks, I am missing, when you got three kids, I am missing this, I am missing that, to go watch a basketball game, not even a football game, a basketball game, and this kid could theoretically even start for us, but decide to enter the transfer portal to go for more NIL money after his freshman year?
It's hard because not just that, and even before transfer portal and all that, you knew you made sacrifices as a college coach because of the amount of time that it took recruiting. You know, that's always been something that you have to make some sacrifices because you do spend a lot of time recruiting guys. And now it's changed, obviously, because they can leave you so much easier and more frequently as well. And it's hard for me because I'm a relationship person. I love people. So when I recruit someone or we recruit someone and they decide to come to Carolina, I've developed a really good relationship with them. And then when they get here, I'm not a head coach that just is never seen around the building and don't know all the players' names. Like, I have relationships with all 120 players on the team. I care about them. I enjoy being around them. And it hurts me, like, as a person when they decide they don't want to be a part of this program, you know, and sad to see people go. So that's troublesome. So that is tough. And I've heard college coaches say, forget this. Like, I'm not going to, like, wear myself out recruiting guys out of high school. I'm just going to rely on the portal. And I'm going to do what needs to be done with high school recruiting, but they can leave me after a year. So why would I spend all this time investing in them for them to leave? I'm just going to go get guys out of the portal each year, and that's how I'll build my team. I mean, I've heard coaches say that, and that's great for them. So there's a lot of great stories about guys that came from high school, came here for the right reasons, or came to any school for the right reasons, had a great experience, graduated, spent 4 or 5 years, and went on to the NFL, and were successful in life after football. That's what you love and hopefully strive for. It's a challenge right now because of the portal. So in my mind, and I don't have all the answers, I think the portal windows are too big, in my opinion. You know, we played Clemson this year. We played Clemson this past season, Thanksgiving weekend. The Friday after the Clemson game, the portal opened, and it was open to like the second week of January. I mean, to me, that's crazy. We don't need to give – I'm all for people being able to transfer. We've benefited from it. So this isn't Shane, get off my lawn, and I'm anti-portal. But I don't think we need to give young men over a month to figure out that they may be better off somewhere else, because that gives other people that are tampering with these players a month to tamper with them. And they're home for Christmas break. They're home after the bowl game, and you're not around them. So one thing that we've done in college athletics, we've shortened the portal window. So the portal is going to be a little bit smaller. But then we also have a second portal window, which we're in right now. And that's 2 weeks, you know. So portal-wise, there's basically 6 weeks a year as it stands right now where people can leave your program and they're just unrestricted free agents. And so that would be one thing. We allow them to transfer an unlimited amount of times, which isn't helping them from an academic standpoint, because a lot of these guys are transferring to schools and these degree and credit hours aren't transferring over. So they're losing credits and getting farther and farther away from graduation. So does that mean there's a one-time transfer, and then if you transfer again, you have to sit out a year like the rule used to be a few years ago? I don't know. Maybe that's the answer, but I definitely think there's some things that we can do better just from a, not just for the coaches, but for the student athletes as well, that might be a little bit better for them. But for us, Trey, it starts with recruiting the right guys out of high school and that want to be here for the right reasons. And hopefully they have a great experience while they're here. We treat them right. We coach them hard, be honest with them, hold them accountable, and make this a fun place to be a part of that they don't want to leave. You know, and that's what I try and spend my time on during the recruiting process. And then once they get here.
We'll be right back with more of the Trey Gowdy podcast.
All right, I got a couple of quick questions because I want to let you get back to work, and I really don't have a job, so I don't have anywhere to go, but I know you do. So I've known Kim Mulkey for 20 years. She got tossed out of a game this year. It looked to me, and she almost confessed afterwards, that she meant to get tossed out of the game. Mark Kingston, I don't know him. I think you know him, our baseball coach. He got tossed from a game recently and honestly should have been tossed from the Citadel game. Why he sat there and watched that strike zone and did not go get thrown out of the baseball game, you'll have to ask him that. But football coaches don't get thrown out of the game. So have you ever wondered, or is it just me, like Lamont Paris can be sent to the showers, Dawn Staley can be kicked out, Mark Kingston can be kicked out, but you, I've never seen a football coach kicked out of a game. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
It's a good question. To me, getting kicked out of the game in football, like the equivalent would be getting a unsportsmanlike conduct flag thrown on you, which is a 15-yard penalty. And I think the rule is if you got two of those as a player, you're kicked out of the game. So I think I'm correct in saying it would be the same as a coach if you got two 15-yard penalties. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of give and take back and forth with the officials during the game. And I think our SEC officials, they do an amazing job of, you know, letting coaches vent when they need to vent, as long as coaches don't go over the line. Also telling you to shut up when you need to shut up. And I just think there's a great mutual respect with the coaches and the officials in this league. And I can't speak for other coaches, because you see baseball coaches get tossed pretty regularly, and you see basketball coaches, they get tossed out as well. And then football coach-wise, I mean, you get a 15-yard penalty and you cost your team 15 yards. That, to me, in a lot of ways, is the equivalent of getting thrown out of a game. But I don't want
to – I used to never see that. I saw Josh Heupel get one. I still, to this day, don't know what he did. I saw a coach named Shane Beamer get one. I still, to this day, don't know what he did. Mark Kingston, I mean, he took two steps towards the umpire and he was going to take a shower. And again, I don't know him, but he seems like a mild-mannered guy.
Yeah. I think, you know, I don't know. Basketball teams, they play over 30 games. Baseball teams, they got more than that. Football gets 12. Maybe that has something to do with it. You know, our rules are pretty clear about not coming out on the playing field and not interfering with officials during the game, risking fines, things like that. So I certainly don't want to get fined by any stretch of the imagination for criticizing them or preventing them from doing their job. Josh Heupel and I both got one, both on the same day. The one common denominator was they both officiating crews were Big Ten officiating crews. I'm just saying we went 12 games that year, didn't have a single issue with an SEC crew, and we both got flags thrown on us by Big Ten crews. So I'm not criticizing the Big Ten referees, but I thought
I will. You don't have to. I will.
I didn't deserve it. I mean, I didn't do anything. I didn't use foul language, and unfortunately, I think sometimes you run across officials that maybe are a little bit too sensitive and maybe take themselves way too seriously. And I know from talking to Josh, he didn't think his was necessarily warranted. And if I deserved it, I would say I deserved it. I probably said things that I did deserve that didn't get flagged. But that day down in the Gator Bowl, I'm still mad at myself because I cost us 15 yards right before the half, and we could have gotten points out of that. But I didn't deserve the flag. I would have told you if I did.
No, I watched the game. I may have watched it twice. I, to this day, do not know. Oh, but there was another bad call in that game, too. But my therapist has encouraged me to let all of that go. So we're going to end with this. It is possible for you to have the sixth highest rated recruiting class in the country and be sixth in the SEC. It is possible for you to have like one of the best football teams in the country and not be in the top five in the SEC. How do you process the fact that the league you are in, not only the league, your annual opponent is Clemson, yeah, which is a perennial powerhouse. Yeah. You play North Carolina. You don't have to, but you do. How do you like process what is success when you are in the toughest football, college football league in the country?
Yeah, no, it's a, you know, it's a battle week in, week out. I mean, you talk about our baseball program and Coach Kingston. I mean, he's got the same situation right now. I mean, he could be the seventh best team in the nation, but be the seventh team in the SEC as stacked as the SEC is right now when you look at the national baseball rankings. I just look at it as, one, it is the best conference in America. There's a reason that there's some schools and other conferences that are suing their conference to get out of it so they could get into this league. And that's not criticizing or negative recruiting. It's the truth. I mean, it goes to show just from a revenue standpoint and how great this league is. There's a reason that Texas and Oklahoma left a pretty good situation in the Big 12 to come to this league. So I just look at it, Trey, as how fortunate I am to be in this conference, and because it's premier in college athletics. Two, I look at it as a competitor, and we talk about compete as a core value in this program all the time. If you are a competitor, you want to compete against the best, and that's absolutely what you get the opportunity to do. And that's in recruiting, that's on Saturdays. And you know that if you're do a really, really good job in recruiting and you're one of the best teams in recruiting in the SEC, you're going to be one of the most talented teams in the country. And if you're one of the better football teams on the field in the SEC, you're going to be one of the better football teams in the country as well. And that's how I look at it. We know what we're up against. We get to go, you know, play those games and compete against those guys. I get to compete against those Hall of Fame coaches in this league. And, you know, you could pound your head on the wall if you start thinking about all the ranked teams and schedules and all that as well. We get to and look at it as an opportunity, and there's nowhere to hide. There's no weeks off where you can take a breath in this conference and say, okay, we got school X this week. If we just show up, we're going to be okay. You don't get that in this conference, and it's a grind, but it's what we signed up for, and it's why players in college athletics want to play in this conference. It's why with the NFL draft, every year when you watch the NFL draft, this year will be, I think, 20 straight years the SEC's led the nation in draft picks per conference as well. It's because the best teams and coaches and players are in this league, and I'm fortunate to be a part of it.
Y'all will start your fall camp, I guess, in August. Mm-hmm. Between now and then, and I'm going to let you literally go hit range balls or whatever you want to do after this question, but between now and then, what is the life of an SEC football coach like? Spring ball's over, fall ball hasn't started. What's this window like?
Yeah, it's still a lot. The month of May is busy with – it's a slower month because of the portal. If there's guys that we want to bring into our program from the transfer portal, you'll be doing some visits where they come visit your campus in the month of May. So we're going to be doing that over the next week or so. May's a little bit slower for a head coach. The busy thing for me in May is just going out and speaking to Gamecock Club events. So I'll be in your part of the state here sometime in May. So I certainly expect to see you there.
I can't afford the tickets. I'm essentially unemployed right now.
I'll comp you. So doing booster club events in May and being able myself as a coach to kind of get out and go visit some other programs, talk to some other coaches, whether it be college or NFL, just picking their brains on stuff. I'm going to do a little bit of that in May. June, super busy with your players come back on campus for summer school. So your players are around. You have summer camps for the little kids and high school age kids. You're doing your summer camps in June. So we have a bunch of those for about the first 3 weeks, as well as recruiting visits. We have three weekends in June where we'll be hosting upcoming high school seniors that we are recruiting to South Carolina, where they'll come in on Friday and leave on Sunday with their families. So June's really busy. last part of June, first 3 weeks of July is a little bit of a slower time. You're still around your players, but it's a dead period in recruiting, meaning they can't come visit you. So if you want to get away, you want to work on your golf game, you can do all that in the month of July. And it's kind of like the calm before the storm, before practice starts in August. So still busy, but compared to other months, maybe not as busy, but June is certainly a grind.
Well, I don't think anyone is going to outwork you. That certainly is the book on you, that they're not going to out-recruit you. They're not going to outwork you. I meant what I said when I introduced you. My Clemson friends and family members, because you can't control who your sisters marry, so I have family members who went to Clemson, they hated when we hired you because they all like you. And it's hard to hate South Carolina when you like the football coach. So you got a great reputation in a really, really tough job. And I appreciate you taking time to update us on the state of the University of South Carolina Fighting Gamecock football program.
You're kind to have me on and appreciate the kind words as well. Much respect for you and all you do, and look forward to seeing you soon.
I will see you if I can get it. May be my wife's Christmas money or one of my kids' birthday money, but if I can scrounge the money to go to a Gamecock Club event, I may go and listen to you get a lot of questions about why you don't blitz more or why you don't throw to the tight end. All the same questions of all I've been hearing, which is why I don't go.
No doubt. I'll keep you posted. You can be my guest at it. We'll do that.
All right. Coach Shane Beamer, thank you for joining us. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.